Hey there, everyone. We are back here for Amazing Race Canada, episode 7, where teams went to Newfoundland and Labrador. And I am Dan Heaton. I am not Jessica Leese, which means I have a special guest here while Jess is on vacation. Mr. Mike Bloom is here to discuss the death of his fantasy draft team, which is unfortunately empty. Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Dan. I just flew into this podcast, and boy, are my arms tired. And I know that that bombed sufficiently to most of the listeners out there, but hopefully if any newfies are out there, they're rollicking up a storm, because as we all know, newfies are the most comedic Canadians, at least according to John Montgomery, apparently.
Who knew that Newfoundland was so known for stand-up comedy and for throwing food at people that are bad at comedy? Did you know this?
Yes, number one in food, in both comedy and food waste. Unfortunately, it's a two sides of a very dirty coin in Newfoundland, but you can't judge them. I do kind of, pangs of my heart are going out to the fact that we did miss out on our two newfie cousins this season, not only coming back to their home province, but also the idea of them trying this stand-up comedy roadblock, which I'm sure would be rife with possibilities. So this is also making a very broad assumption that they would be able to make it through an additional four legs, which, considering how they went out on that third leg, I don't know if we can necessarily guarantee that.
Yeah, that would have been a stretch, but you never know. I mean, teams, if they had finished last at the right time, but it would have been fun to see them try it. Several of the teams, I would have liked to see Aaron or Deb, or how about Deb trying the stand-up comedy? How would that have gone?
They would have killed.
Well, so I don't want to bury the lead here. We did, unfortunately, say goodbye to Andrea and Ebony. But before we get to that, Mike, so this is the first time you've been on the show since the preview. So I'm curious to get your thoughts on the season. What are you thinking of season 5 so far?
Yeah, so I'll admit I was a little trepidatious during the first two episodes, because if I'm being completely honest here, Dan, they were not very good. Between the leg structure, the fact that really we saw a lot of Team Giver and a lot of the goofy newfies, and that was kind of it, made me a little nervous for what was to come with the season. But I really feel like since episode 3, we've gotten to know more of these teams. We got to see more interesting tasks that, you know, I think one of the complaints that you guys had in that second episode was, even though, yes, it did acknowledge this tragedy, you know, that went on with this huge fire, these were tasks that you could sort of like copy and paste in any leg of the Amazing Race in any edition. At least moving forward, we're seeing more diverse tasks. We're seeing a lot of, I feel like this season has a lot of variance behind it. And you both have talked about this, but in terms of this idea that teams are swapping around positions constantly, and we're going to see it in this leg too, even though I think we have like a perennial top finisher and a perennial bottom finisher over the course of this leg, in that Sam and Paul crushed it and Andrea and Ebony absolutely did not crush it. Everyone else was totally swapping positions, and I feel like that's a microcosm of this season, in that I wouldn't say necessarily that everyone at this point can win, but the other teams, honestly, besides Sam and Paul, have been jumping around positions so much that it makes it at least exciting. And I've enjoyed getting to know these teams because I feel like there's a lot of fun to them. I know I was obviously not right about a lot of things in our preseason show, but I will pat myself on the back slightly in that I did speak up saying Sam and Paul were going to be interesting. And especially this episode, they proved themselves to be a very interesting and, in my opinion, very rootable team. So even though the first two episodes really worried me about this season, it's gotten good. I don't know if it's as good as like 4 and 2 for me. It might be on par with 1 and definitely better than 3. But, you know, Amazing Race Canada, usually an OK season is still above average in the comparable Amazing Race standard.
Yeah. And I was a little concerned, not that I thought it was a bad season, but that early on, I did feel like, and Jess especially felt this way, where she thought some of the tasks, again, like you said, were a lot of the things we'd seen. But what was good, it's not that I wanted to lose all the teams we kind of expected, especially the first three that we lost that we expected to lose. But what that did, I think, is the top five. It's hard to say. Yes, Sam and Paul seem like the front runners right now, but we did have Adam and Andrea 1-2 legs. And Corey and Ivana have that weird kind of underdog team that keeps surviving kind of vibe to them. So you never know. It's been all over the map. I feel like the team that like symbolizes this season, though, is Karen and Bert, because they will flop into first so often and yet always end up fourth or fifth. So it's almost like they're probably not going to win, but somehow they're solid. They're fun. They're fun generally, but that's kind of how the season's been.
Yes, and hopefully, like Karen and Bert, it will also have a strong 10th frame of this metaphoric bowling game that is the Amazing Race Canada 5. No face-off penalty for this season.
Yes. Oh, how about Bert with the dancing, though? You knew that wasn't going to go well. I did think it was interesting with Sam and Paul, where did you find that their first place finish was a bit telegraphed pretty early in this episode? Because it seemed like right when they, at the beginning, we found out about Sam's medical school acceptance, I felt like they were going to win the leg, which usually I don't see here, but it seemed like they were destined for this leg and possibly more. What do you think? Do you think they're going to win the race?
Yeah, this might be me sounding a little hyperbolic. I mean, first of all, they're definitely my pick to win at this point, just because, I mean, you're Mr. Stats, man. You keep going back to the stats, and they definitely have the most consistent record so far, which I think is very indicative of just a very solid Amazing Race team overall. It's really tough to think about the number of times they've really struggled on something, especially interpersonally, like the argument, quote unquote, they got into this episode of, oh, did they row too far from the shore to get out of the boat? Oh, no, they didn't. Okay, fight over. Like, they're much like Steph and Kristen last time, they're very strong in terms of their relationship, and I think that bodes well for their racing skills. You know, last week they might have left the roadblock in last place, but they made the very wise move of saying, okay, let's get directions first. And in a show that does a lot of self-driving, which again I feel like really contributes to this variance we were speaking about before, that's a really wise move to do, taking a little time here to make up some time in the long run. And as a result, they were able to really crush it last episode. So I think, barring a really cataclysmic series of events, or even like a Zed and Shabir type of thing where they just don't get the right tasks, I think they're going to do extremely well in this competition. Going down, boiling things down to this leg, being a little hyperbolic here once again, I want to say that Sam might have had just overall like the best leg of any Amazing Race contestant I can remember in recent memory, just because of the fact that not only did they finish in first, but he also got like a life-changing piece of news in the course of a leg as well. And I'm sure we'll talk about, the family messages that came about. And obviously Sam's came with a certain amount of news as well, which I think sort of weighed the message a little bit differently. But I mean, he said it was the best day of his life at the mat. And I think you'd be hard pressed to say it wouldn't be. I think it'd be tough to also think back to like any individual racers who had better days. Maybe if like a team came in first and one of the partners proposed to the other one, that'd be another great day. But Sam had a really, really good day.
Yeah, he's the real star, I think, here of that team. Not that Paul is a bad racer, but we saw it last week too, where Sam was like, he built the tulip bench that they made. And this week he's with the stand-up comedy, where he's seems to be good at most things, like, or the tests last week, for example. So almost you could say he had one of the best legs this week. He also almost had one of the best legs last week. So it's kind of they're trending up for sure beyond even the numbers. But let's get into it. Let's get into the family video. So we start out and teams fly to Western Newfoundland and go to our favorite friends, BMO, who we have not heard as much about, to get a family video. And of course, as it happens, Sam finds out his news about med school. It's like, it's great. Hey, that gives him something to play for. But apparently it must be very hard to get into this particular med school, because despite being smart, this is a big thing. So I thought it was exciting. What did you think about some of the family videos?
Yeah, I mean, it's also interesting because I love the fact that obviously Sam and his family know which school he got into, but it's very clear that he was not allowed to say the school on the show, because I think, what did his parents say? Like, congratulations, Sam, you got into your first choice school for medical school. Like,
yes.
It's very clear they did like the dubbing over so that they couldn't actually give any sort of like unintentional promotion to any one of these schools. But I mean, I guess a great way to incentivize people going to the bank for an Amazing Race task. I know that Amazing Race Canada, I mean, the product placements, what what's keeping them on the air. This definitely beats, what was it? I think it's season three or four, going to the gas station and like spending 250,000 points. That's definitely a step above this, but still we're on like Amazing Race Family Edition levels of check out these landmarks. So I'm happy that they at least spiced it up by checking out the family messages. Did any stick out to you personally, besides obviously the Big Sam news?
Not that much. I mean, we did have the dog for, I believe, for Team Giver.
Yes. Can this dog Ozzy?
Yes. Ozzy. Named after a famous Survivor player. No, that is not real news.
I mean, I'll be honest. I feel like Kenneth and Ozzy might be indulging in the same habits, if you get what I'm saying.
I don't even know what you mean at all. Now, Karen and Bert seeing their kids was nice. In general, it was fine. I don't feel like, you know, anyone beyond the dog and the Sam and Paul. I always like these kinds of things, especially when they don't take up a huge amount of time. So it was cool for me, but mainly just at least they didn't just go to the bank for no reason.
Yeah, to cash checks. I'm not entirely sure. What did you think overall, by the way? We're going to get a very interesting Amazing Race leg here in that this all takes place in the town of Cornerbrook, even though it's the largest city in Western Newfoundland. I still feel like it's pretty comparably small. It almost felt like to me like one of these like homebrewed Amazing Race legs, like you might see Jess, I know, participated in a couple and actually helped plan some here in New York. I know like Justin of the Green Team of season 27 did this type of stuff where the tasks are not exactly OTT and big and extreme. It's bowling and rowing a boat and hearing a story. But the other interesting thing about this as well is that we started in Newfoundland, then we went to a bunch of different places. Now we're back to Newfoundland, and then we're going somewhere else. I can't remember, Dan, in the Amazing Race Canada, if we've ever had an instance where they return back to the starting location and then keep going on the race. Sometimes in Amazing Race history, they do the circuitous loop of let's finish where we started, but otherwise, it's weird to kind of do like a check-in in Newfoundland before going off again to Cuba or to Panama.
Yeah, it's weird. It's also they've been to Vancouver twice already because they went there, went somewhere else, and then stopped in Vancouver again on their way overseas. So they're doing, if you tried to map this, they crossed Canada one way in the premiere, then went back, then crossed again and went overseas, then came back and went to Ottawa. It's like they're doing this weird back and forth, and now they're going south. But it's definitely, I mean, it's different already than like the U.S. where they're going to circle the globe most of the time. So there's going to be more back and forth. But this seems like a different level. I don't know if they just wanted to log a lot of miles or really sell the greatness of Cinerama here, but it's an odd course. The travel is a small part because they generally are all on the same flight pretty much all the time. So it doesn't make a huge difference. It's just, I guess they're keep changing it up. It's been odd.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if they're having the contest between Amazing Race Canada seasons to see who logs the least amount of miles, like it did with that car a couple of legs ago, I think Amazing Race Canada 5 would come in last place by the number of times it's just gone back and forth across the country.
Yeah, and they said this was the halfway point. Now, I assume they just mean how many episodes or such or around there, but I wondered if that was somehow, if it's going by miles, they're going to be doing a lot more flying all over. Though my guess is they're going to Panama. That's probably the last international location, and I haven't looked it up or anything, so I'll be curious how that goes. But I guess let's get into, so after they go to the bank, we head to the detour where we can find Dory, apparently. I'm sorry, find your Dory or do a family story. And personally, I really love these types of goofy tasks where they have characters like, you know, we have Loki, Tom Hiddleston was there, and or someone not so convincing. And basically these stories, I like these kind of goofy tasks like this, which, you know, they tend to do in Canada fairly often. And I think that one was, I don't know if it was easier or not. I don't know. What did you think of these tasks? Do you like the kind of odd family tree let's tell a story and remember it tasks, or am I overselling it?
Yeah, so, I mean, the old school Survivor fan in me is obviously going to enjoy sitting around a campfire and hearing a story and trying to remember details in order to progress forward in the game. I actually really like this task because it really harkens back to that old school Amazing Race feel of sort of a brain versus brawn, a classic breakdown of, you know, here's something really physical if you don't want to think, and if you don't want to move your muscles, here's you know, a task that really makes you rely on your memory. So I'm happy that they sort of broke it down on those levels, and you sort of see the team strategically take things based on that. Karen and Bert, for example, who, while Bert is probably a powerhouse at the rowing, maybe Karen isn't so much. They decide to have a penchant for the dramatic and go for the family story. In terms of the family story, I completely agree. I love that Amazing Race Canada is almost like obsessed with this weird cosplay and role playing, because, you know, even outside of this, we've seen, you know, when they had to, for a roadblock, dress up like one of the famous founding fathers of Canada and deliver a speech. We had to have them walk around a room and like identify 10 founding fathers. There's obviously the roadblock that we always talk about in season 3, where they had to reenact the Western Saloon bar fight. And here, you know, it definitely was no Chris Hemsworth or Tom Hiddleston or Anthony Hopkins, but I feel like it was an interesting Odin, Loki, and Thor, especially to hear about all of their Norse debauchery.
Yeah, it was funny. I mean, a lot of it was just remembering names. It was kind of memorizing. But I like these. I even like the stand up comedy later, where, granted, like you said, it's not epic like the skydiving or, you know, something really what you would call amazing or spectacular. But sometimes, you know, you got to have a lower budget episode, I guess, because you can't always have them walking between buildings. You have to just have, hey, let's put up some tents and let's put people in some costumes and have them do that. I don't know. I find that, though, the rowing, of course, I don't want to undersell, because it did allow us to see how many different weird ways people decide to row. So how about you, Mike? Are you a very good rower here? Would you have done well at finding the dory?
I mean, I feel like Find Your Dory feels like some sort of, I don't know, self-help seminar hosted by Ellen DeGeneres, I'm assuming, in 10 years or so. And I'm assuming that's like, I feel like you find out like the true Pixar kids that were in this group of people. Like, you know, Team Giver was totally hooked by the name of the task, that once they found out it was a physical thing, they're like, oh, great, this is sort of the icing on top of the sundae here. But can't say I'm a great rower. I think I maybe rowed a boat in total like 3 times, and I mean like oar to water 3 times in my life, so I definitely be more of the Ivana instead of the Corey of really going through, though I do know what an oar is. But I do agree it at least provided some interesting moments in these people trying to figure out how to row a boat.
Yeah, and so we got a question from a listener, Danielle Coyne, who asked which team had the most hilarious rowing technique. So what do you think? I mean, obviously it was not Sam and Paul, who, beyond their kind of, you know, row, row, row kind of, you know, calls, which was kind of funny. But who was the most ridiculous at the rowing?
I mean, you got to give points to a team that says, oh, this is a rowboat. No, screw it. We're going to paddle it like a canoe, which, again, I am not physically adept. I do not know how much harder that is to row a boat that is not a canoe like a canoe. It is not aerodynamically shaped like a canoe. But I also did love the image of Corey and Ivana sitting facing each other. And eventually Corey decides to just sort of take the brunt on it himself. But I don't know. It seemed like they were going Little Mermaid for a second, going in to kiss the girl, but also extremely inefficient, because you do not, I don't know a lot about rowing, but I also know that you do not face each other on the rowboat, because that's just going to screw you up, and you're trying to paddle together, not in mirror motions. That'll just get you stuck in the same place in the middle of the lake.
Yeah, you're basically, then it comes down to who's stronger or where the current is. Like, I mean, Corey probably still, Ivana is very strong, but Corey was rowing a little better, I think. But yeah, you generally want to be, you want to be both backwards, probably, is the way to go, you know, in the general idea that I've seen in my very limited experience. But yeah, Team Giver, I mean, those guys, they look like they're going to be good at every physical task, but in general, they often are not that great. So it's interesting that a team that won the first leg, and I thought, oh, this is going to be one, like a really strong team, and they're not bad, they find their way, but they seem to always kind of struggle. At least once a week, we have some task where they do something really ridiculous.
I completely agree with what you guys have been saying the past few weeks in that I think definitely, especially after the first leg, I'm like, all right, here comes the dominance of Team Giver in both airtime and in, racing acumen. And especially when they got all three of those express passes by pure happenstance, I was, grabbing my head in fury. But then they expended it and they started doing pretty badly. I mean, they say at the end of the leg, they come in second. They said, like, that's basically winning to us because, yeah, you look at their record. They finished first in the first leg. But other than that, they haven't finished above fourth until just now. Now, that being said, I could still see an inside chance of them at least making the finals, if not winning. And I'm glad that they've turned off the Giver at least a little bit. And they've been, a little more chummy. I love the Timmy Ketchup or Johnny Mustard or whatever it was last week. I've been enjoying them more. Their affectations are still getting on me a little bit, Ryan's especially, just because, like, there's points where I look at him and I'm like, you can't be a real person. Like, you're acting like an SNL interpretation of a surfer who talks like this always with a weird intonation. And I gotta do the task. Yeah. And it's just like, you're not a real person. But once you sort of let go of that artifice in your head, I've been enjoying them a little more, especially as you said, sort of their odd incompetence, but not so much of an incompetence that it's resulting in them catastrophically losing the race. They're still maintaining pretty well, but there's certainly a lot of bumbling around.
Yeah. And they focus so much more on Ryan too. I feel like Kenneth will do the task a lot, and they're always talking to Ryan, and he's just like, oh, I don't know if we can do this, or
I don't really know about it.
Is Celine Dion singing the national anthem? Or, yeah, I don't know. Part of me finds him endearing, but yeah, or, oh, we're not gonna do so well at the bowling, but hey, they're, I guess that makes them more endearing, but I don't know if I feel so good. I don't think they're going to make the finals. I think they're probably going to finish fourth, but a lot of that for me is reading the edit. Like, if I read the edit, I feel like right now they'd be getting the fourth most likely to get to the finals, but it wouldn't shock me for them to get there. I don't know. Something about it feels like they're going to finish fourth or maybe even fifth, though I think fifth is still the Karen and Bert spot, I think, is fifth, because that's where they always finish, is like fourth or fifth. but who knows? I hate to speculate too much, but that's kind of the sense I'm getting right now about Team Giver. But I am going to win my Giver count estimate, I think, for sure, regardless. So that's the really important contest here, right?
Yes, the true winners, exactly. No, I mean, I don't want to prognosticate too much, as you said, but I feel like not reading the edit too much, I personally am seeing a Sam and Paul, Adam and Andrea Giver finale. I don't know, I'm just feeling like Giver, especially with the second place finish, is going to have this storyline of their latter half of the race resurgence, where you could hear John being like, Kenneth and Ryan struggled in the beginning after riding high, but then they learned to ride this, ride the wave to the crest of its peak, or some sort of weird surfing analogy, where I could totally see them, like, not exactly being in the doldrums, but not doing too well the past few weeks. But suddenly now they sort of have their pep in their step back. They've got a good streak going, and now they really pose a threat to win near the latter half of the race.
Now, and that's a good point, because even though they've had a few times, like, they had a stretch of a few weeks in a row where they got to the pit stop and John was like, from Hamilton to this place and from Hamilton to this place, not Hamilton the musical, Hamilton the city. But like, it was almost like he was like, they made sure to show that. It was almost like making, like, these small time guys who, are going around the world. So yeah, you may have convinced me a little bit. I'm still all kind of on the Corey and Ivana underdog train, but Team Panda, I don't know. They've been close to the back so much. I just wonder if they've got enough to get all the way there.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, Team Panda should basically coin themselves Team Yo-Yo, just because, I mean, look how they've done. Second, eighth, second, sixth, sixth, third, fifth. It's just when they're bad, they're bad. When they're good, they're good. So, there's both sides there, but they have some very, very big flaws. They might have the biggest flaws out of all the teams left in that, they just have bad luck when it comes to being on the road, whether it means them driving themselves or them experiencing some sort of crypt keeper like a taxi driver when they're overseas. And who knows what happens when they go overseas next time. But you hope they'd be able to shake this bad luck because they don't do too badly at the task themselves. I mean, let's remember when they crushed that pottery task back in leg three. They do really well when it's sort of up to their own volition. But for some reason, when them or someone else gets behind the wheel, they don't do well.
Yeah, and Andrea and Ebony had a similar issue, too, where it seems like they're not as good at the task, but you put them behind a car. And unfortunately, this season, which not unfortunately for the viewer, I think it's awesome that they drive pretty much every leg when they're in Canada. But Corey and Ivana seemed to like, OK, we're in second. Now we got to drive somewhere. OK, we're in sixth. It happens every time. Now, of course, this is the perfect opportunity to discuss what some consider the greatest moment in Amazing Race Canada history. The Corey takes a break. Do you think it went on for so long? Like, I don't know. The Corey takes a bathroom break. Like, normally, this is the thing I think about, though. I think about if I was on the Amazing Race, they never show it. I know people go to the bathroom, but you're on this cab ride or you're trying to get the pit stop and it's a long thing. What do you do if you need to go to the bathroom? You know, you just, there's probably lots of things I don't need to know about how people went to the bathroom, but the show decides this is the good time where we're going to show Corey, not up close. I mean, it wasn't gratuitous, but, you know, pretty clearly, you know, and a lot of, you know, sounds and, you know, making sure it's clear what he's doing. So what did you think about Corey's break? Was that a highlight for you?
Oh, boy. Yeah. I mean, first of all, when it comes to I don't know what their bathroom habits are. Don't like touch any water bottles that get left behind by the teams as they exit cabs at the end of legs, just because you don't necessarily know what's in them. But no matter what, Corey and Ivana are team number one in that regard. This was a really fun moment. I know we obviously got a lot of comparisons from the listeners out there and Jessica even as well to Tyson and Sally from the most recent and I think last season of Amazing Race Australia, where there was this team of actually sort of like Corey Navani, these big bodybuilders, the guy especially Tyson. This was more of a running gag than a one-time gag like Corey, where throughout the race Tyson had to stop the car and say, stop, I need to go to the bathroom, and it was just a nice little runner throughout the show, and they made it to the finale, so it was fun to sort of get that throughout the course of the race. But yeah, I agree with you, it was an inordinate amount of time. I mean, even Ivana was asking, like, what the hell did you have to drink to be able to necessitate that long of a time relieving yourself? Though maybe Corey's a little camera shy. He was a significant distance away from the camera, but I did love from an editing perspective, they cut away from it and they still cut back to it and he was still there. I mean, when you title the episode after that, you have to feel like that's a significant moment that you captured on film. So you got to make a meal out of it.
Yeah, and I guess too, the setup was good because they have this giant spot because, you know, they're not going to, like, let's say it's like he's around some alley, like goes around the corner. They're not going to like shoot that in a close up. I mean, I don't mean anything graphic, but I just mean it like right behind him. So the fact that they have this giant shot and you've got Ivana sitting in the boat, I'm sure the editors are like, keep rolling, you know, just anything they could do. Yeah. Just like, because they're like, this is gold. We've got it. But
oh boy. Yeah. Emphasis on gold.
Well, it was a fun moment, I have to say. And they've been getting those kinds of moments, which doesn't mean, I mean, all really, if you zoom in, the show has done a good job to me giving moments to all the teams that are left. It helps when you only start with 10 and you kick out a few really quickly, because I feel like even I mentioned Karen and Bert, they still get plenty of moments to rap and to talk about their theater careers and, you know, everything, our community theater. So everybody gets a moment. It's just that very few get to Matt Corey for, you know, excitement in terms of the show, I guess.
No, you bring up a great point in terms of comparing the Amazing Race Canada editing with Amazing Race US editing. And again, I don't want to generalize too much, but I feel like the Amazing Race US is more about characterization of contestants within the context of the race. Like, for example, we didn't find out too much about Scott's background from this most recent season, where he came from and how he was raised. We found out about Scott in the context of how he works on the Amazing Race, as opposed to Adam, for instance, this episode, we find out he liked to do a lot of bowling parties as a kid. Does that translate into bowling, skills 20 years later? Absolutely not. But you have these types of moments. You have, Ivana's history with, her family fleeing her country of origin. Andrea's story with her back. There are all these really interesting stories that they decide to sort of pepper in throughout to really color their experiences. And it also makes up again for maybe if the tasks aren't so extreme, it at least evokes sort of sense memories within these people of thinking about this reminds me of this experience I had back home. It's a really cool thing because, again, it allows us to really get to know them as people rather than just them as characters on The Amazing Race. Again, I don't want to knock the U.S. show too much because, again, I think they do a great job, especially this past season, of really casting well and editing good characters. But I don't know. Amazing Race Canada has just done something a little different in the past five seasons where we've seen them more as individuals who happen to be running the race than reality TV contestants, if that makes any sense.
Oh, it totally does. And I think that was true even as much or more last season, because I you come out of it like when they make them more than just who they are on the show, it's you come out of it liking almost everyone. There are very few people that are like the villains or, because you're not just casting it on the heroes and villains in the show. Like, really, that bowling party, they had a photo from him as a kid bowling. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that the show even went out of a way to do that, and they've done that before. I mean, we've heard stories, Team Giver talk about a tragedy of some of their friends dying. We find out little tidbits about Adam and Andrea and like I just mentioned a minute ago, or Karen and Bert, not just that he's a rapper. They also like to do theater and they like to dress up and they're improv comedians. I mean, if no one has their one thing, like even Sam and Paul, you could easily just do it on their relationship or about Paul having to come out to his family. But no, we also have Sam's medical school. There's just they make them seem like cool people. And I'm sure the people on the US version are cool people for the most part, but we don't, because the show's like, which is weird, because the show also has fewer tasks. So somehow here in Canada, we're able to have a lot of tasks and learn more about the people. That I don't really understand how that's possible. But because we had a speed bump, a face-off, a detour, and a roadblock this week.
Yeah, I mean, this was everything in the kitchen sink.
Yeah, so speaking of the speed bump, what did you think about the archery task? How was that? How was that as far as, was it a hard enough speed bump? Was it about right? Because Andrea and Ebony unfortunately couldn't catch up, but it was probably, I think it was about more than just the speed bump, but was that the difference?
Yeah, I mean, this was a little bit of a weak sauce type of just from a logistics perspective. It wasn't even anything fancy. It was, hey, shoot this arrow at a target and score 25 points. It wasn't even score 25 points in this amount of time and then start over. It was just keep going until you score 25 points. So I like to think they were there for like maybe 20 minutes, especially since Andrea apparently has mastered the Warrior 2 pose. And so, she's got a Legolas like archer pose. So I can't imagine that it was really that much of an inconvenience. But at the same time, from a race planner's perspective, with things like a face-off in the leg as well, I'm assuming you don't want to hamper them too much because, I mean, we'll talk about one of the foibles of the face-off is that it's akin a little bit to the intersection of yore in that it requires teams to sort of wait for each other. But before we move on from the detour quickly, I do want to bring up one minor gripe. I know we just lavish a lot of praise onto Amazing Race Canada, but here's a minor thing that I've had with this show this season. And Dan, I don't know if you noticed this. Throughout the show, they run these like informal polls. I think CTV does at like the bottom third of the screen. It drives me insane how during the detour, they'll put up a poll of, okay, which detour option would you choose? But they put it up as Montgomery's explaining the first half, the first task, and then it disappears during the second one. So essentially, you're asking the audience, okay, here's two choices. You're going to hear all about the first one and now make a decision. It makes no sense. It's like if Sam got into medical school and I said, okay, Sam, you can go to two medical schools. And I say like, okay, this one, it costs this much money. These are the programs. These are the teachers you're going to have. This is, where you'll be staying. This is where it's located. Okay, which decision are you going to make? Like, there's the information's incomplete in that equation. Again, it's a very minor quibble, but it's something that I've noticed they've done every single episode with the detour. And it doesn't make any sense to make people make a decision when you only know one half of the detour.
Yeah, I hadn't even noticed that. I mean, I've noticed, obviously, the questions. Those are hard to miss. But I hadn't noticed that they do that with the detour. I tend to try and tune them out because they're generally, like, really stupid. I mean, they have these questions that'll be like, would you do it? How would you do? And it'd be like, I'd nail it. I'm afraid. I mean, there's like these dumb options and it's always like 70 to 30 or 80 to 20. And the detour one is probably the most interesting. At least it's something like, which one would you pick? That's the most interesting of the questions. That's much better than, are you good at stand-up comedy? I'm funny. No, I'm not. Now, granted, that is not exactly what it said. I don't remember that, but something on that level.
No. There was literally an option. It said, like, of your team, who would do better at this? Me and my partner, neither one of us are funny. So that was quite literally a third option for people to cop out if they wanted to.
And everyone chose neither one of us are funny. 98% said that. No. But now I just think these things... It's fine if you want to do them on the computer, but why do you have to? And they put it pretty big on the screen. So I will say the detour thing is dumb on the surface because, yeah, people, how do people know? But I also just wonder, I'm like, how much are they gaining? It's like the second screen kind of idea. I feel like it always sounds cooler than it is. I mean, maybe. Maybe if I was in Canada, I'd be like, ooh, yeah, I'm funny. But I don't think so. Am I being too harsh on that part of it?
I don't know. If you were from Newfoundland, you'd probably think you were hilarious, apparently. I mean, let's also check in here. We're halfway through the race, Dan. How do you think the wrangle in some millennials to watch this show? How do you think that campaign has been going so far? Is this sort of a sign of that?
I don't think it's probably working that well. I mean, I think they're getting decent ratings from what I mean, I haven't been tracking every week or something, but I think it's kind of following the normal path where the first season was higher. It's gone down a little bit more, but that also probably goes with people not watching shows live and all that. But like, kind of like we talked about, they haven't done so much to do it that way. At least from what I could tell, they've had a few of those VR videos online, which those you can actually access without any type of, VPN or any type of anything like that. You can just go on the YouTube page for CTV, but even those, they're kind of fun. You're like, oh, I'm here. But there's no other teams around. It's just you standing somewhere. So that kind of limits it too. Like they had the one where with the Morse code in the first one and you just stand there and it's like, well, I already saw this on the show. I'm standing here. Okay. And it's not that exciting. So I think, they're trying. That's cool. But, I don't know. I think it's probably a pretty negligible effect. Do you agree? Or
what was it like in VR to watch Andrea and Ebony quit the task almost immediately?
Well, that's what I did in the VR, actually. I was like, can I take a penalty? And they were just like, shut down.
You look around like, oh, everyone else is going to take a while at this Morse code VR. I'm going to skip ahead to the pit stop VR and hopefully I won't get a penalty.
they had quite a ride, Andrea and Ebony, and we haven't really talked about them much, but they took a penalty on the first task. They finished last of the double leg. They finished last again, yet they also have finished near the top several times, like second or third. They're fun. They seem to have a good relationship, but they always, you could tell. I mean, did you, when you saw that penalty being taken right away, did you regret your draft pick of picking them right at that point?
At that point, I was sort of putting more stock into them as sort of like Vanessa and Selena 2.0 in terms of the bottom G dot Odysseus, to quote a Survivor Sucks meme of like, okay, I'm hoping that they're at least going to make it far by just being like kind of inept, but not inept enough to guarantee their sufficient elimination. And the fact that they finished twice at the bottom of nominal elimination, like sort of cemented that factoid to me. So I was disappointed that unlike their predecessors, they did not make it to the finale like Vanessa and Selena did. But like you said, I think they were pretty good. Again, they did not have a good leg this episode. Between, it seems like, I'm assuming them getting lost once again led them to get to the detour last. So then they had to do this speed bump and they were further behind. Then they had to do the face off and they lost that and got the penalty. So it seemed like they were basically just playing catch up the entire time, not Johnny Mustard. But I feel like they were, I think you guys have talked about it before, they were a good team, but I definitely feel like the other teams, even Karen and Bert, were much more steady than they were. I know that Corey and Ivana were team yo-yo, but they were they had much bigger peaks and valleys in terms of how they were doing on the race.
Yeah, they were. And it did seem like, too, Ebony, seem to have certain tasks, like, you know, where they had to put together the materials and other ones. That was another one where Corey just blew past her, where she would be like, oh, I'm not very good with details. And that's fine. I mean, you know, at least she understands that. But there were a few points where I felt like, you know, they weren't as on top of the task when they had a chance, because like we talked about, Corey and Ivana will give you a chance to beat them. They may pull Vic, they might pull, you know, get ahead at the last minute, but they still give you a chance. But still, there's nothing wrong with finishing in sixth place, especially given that I think the top five teams in general are all pretty consistent.
Yeah. And speaking about Andrea and Ebony a little bit as well, it's interesting that you said previous in our conversation here that, you know, the Amazing Race Canada doesn't really do villains. What did you think about, you know, the quote unquote fallout from the botched W turn last week? And it sort of just watching it just made me sort of think as well about in previous Amazing Race Canada seasons, what do you think the biggest fallout has been from a U-turn? And does it compare at all to sort of the fervor and negativity we get from, for example, Dave with Brenschel during Amazing Race 24?
Yeah, here tells you something is I can't even really think of a situation where someone did a U-turn and in the Amazing Race Canada and it became a really big ongoing story. And that might have to do more with the edit, because the U.S. version, they just love, we even saw it with Vank last season where they just, it seems like the drama over U-turns, teams get really upset. Now that said, Andrea and Ebony did seem upset and not, I thought of course, they're going to be upset at Adam and Andrea because they had made this pact. And but for them to be that upset at Corey and Ivana, who were near the back near them and were really very smartly used that, because, I mean, we still don't really know how they knew they were behind them. But the fact that they used it helped to get them to get ahead and then basically to not, you know, not be last, not have to use the speed bump, do all those things. I mean, I don't know. They probably would have been okay, but it certainly didn't hurt. So that seemed a little goofy. But again, the show didn't make a big deal about it. So how much do you think the edit plays in the U-turn? Because even they could have played this up. They could have made this 15 minutes of the show. And I was so relieved that it was not that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's one advantage, as you said, of having just so much in a leg is that you don't really have time to get dedicated to it. And like you said, I'm assuming that Ebony specifically was pretty pissed off at everything that happened. But it also might speak towards the general stereotypes of Canadians just being more amicable and a little more nicer and maybe a little less vocal than some of their American counterparts. I would say that going back to, you know, you being hard pressed to think of like a really big fallout from a U-turn, I guess. I mean, the biggest one that sticks out to me was just Body Break being so pissed off at everyone in the show when they got U-turned back in season one. But I guess outside of that, I don't know, maybe when Steph and Kristen like U-turned Joel and Ashley twice, I think last season, like that might be the biggest ongoing storyline. But outside of it, yeah, considering how much the U-turn has really become a staple of drama in the American version, it's so interesting that they're sort of, they built it up as like, oh, there's a U-turn. And then they sort of just say, yeah, that's sort of a drop in the bucket compared to the rest of the stuff that goes on in the Amazing Race Canada usually.
Yeah, and that's a good one about, I mean, Body Break, that's also the first season, and I think there, I mean, who knows how much of, I don't know if Body Break has like all the Amazing Race US like on DVD that they are taped that they watched over and over before the show. They may not have, I mean, realized even, I mean, I knew they knew what a U-turn was because you probably read the rules. But in that case, coming on the first season, I think it's still like a rare situation. But yeah, I remember Ashley, you mentioned, was kind of upset last time. But again, I don't. It was almost like, I mean, Joel, of course, probably was very deadpan and just saying, yeah, we got U-turned. And now, you know, and I mean that not in a Gino and Jesse way. I mean that in a very fun way. Sorry, again went to Gino and Jesse ripping, which
drink.
Yes, but nothing to do with this episode yet still had to bring it up. But yeah, I think part, there's a lot of things you mentioned, like one, I mean, I, it's not that everyone in the Canadian version is so nice, everyone in the US version isn't or something, or, you know, even Redmond seemed like a nice guy, though he was kind of a jerk, you know, after they got U-turned or after the stuff with Vank and Ashton. But I also think the show tries a little harder to paint kind of, they'll throw in a little conflict, but the show itself just doesn't want, I mean, the U-turn in itself is kind of, I don't think of it that way, but it's considered kind of cutthroat. So the show kind of diminishes the importance of it. Like you said, it's like, okay, we have a double U-turn. It's really important. Yeah. But we also have these like 12 other things going on. So it's almost like the show doesn't want to make it seem like teams are fighting. It's more like they really go out of their way to show teams getting along and such. Mm-hmm. But of course we did, even with the face-off, which I think we should go on to talk about that. You know, it's a very important face-off, especially as you get down to it. Yet there wasn't, I mean, you saw teams, they were tense or whatever, but you didn't really see teams like getting up in anybody's face. There was no, you know, you stick, I just got a strike or whatever. Everybody still seemed like they took it in the right spirit. You know, it's, how exciting was it to watch the many games of five pin bowling for you? Was that a tense enough face-off?
I mean, let's look at it in the great pantheon of face-offs. We have water polo, curling, volleyball, golf, and now bowling. We basically covered like the wee pantheon of sports, essentially. I think we have what, like baseball and frisbee to go. So I totally expect a Frolf face-off coming up in the next couple of weeks, which Kenneth and Ryan are going to crush, by the way. I know that you and Jess have also talked about like ways to make the face-off a little bit less about recreational sports, maybe have them try a puzzle or, you know, do, I don't know, what if they did the face-off as like if they did like the Canadian test and they gave them like a different set of questions every time they had to face off, and whoever got the most correct answers would move on. Like, that's an interesting way to sort of take this idea of having two teams directly face off to each other. One will move on and one will stay behind. Here, I thought it was fine enough. Like you said, there wasn't really any malice going on between these teams. The biggest dramatic moment you got was Bert dancing a little too early to spell his team's doom in the 10th frame. I'll say on a personal level, I don't do a lot of five pin bowling. Much like Adam, I did a lot of bowling when I was a kid, especially like the late night weekend bowling when they would turn on the dark lights and the neon. But I haven't strayed into the bowling alley much in my 20s, but I haven't done a lot of five pin bowling, which I'm assuming is a lot like candle pin bowling. They might be sort of like in the same family, much like, you know, Loki's two wives, but not necessarily related to each other. What about you? What's your history with it?
I have not bowled much lately. I imagine that it may become more common when my daughters get a little older. I did bowl a lot, you know, as a kid, but also I don't know if I had a lot of bowling birthday parties, but even we used to go bowling sometimes when I was younger, though I say younger, it was probably in my 20s, like you just mentioned. I never did any like different types. It was always, I mean, yes, there was some of the cosmic bowl, or there's probably like 100 different names for that. You know, sometimes even where they were playing like 80s music videos on the screen and such. And I don't mean in the 1980s, you know, so a lot of that.
Did you just call them music videos back then?
That's what they were called, music videos. Yeah. But a lot of things like that, but most nothing with five pins. So I didn't totally get how this was scored. A lot of, you know, and the show did not go out of their way, which is fine. They didn't need to give me a long explanation. All they had to say is, okay, Bert needs a strike, or Bert needs something and he throws three gutter balls. Ivana needs a strike. They kept it very simple for us, but yeah, I mean, it kind of went as expected, you know, for the most part. It came down to the big thing was basically Corey and Ivana versus Andrea and Ebony. And that, I mean, even though Corey and Ivana were, I think, fairly far ahead of Andrea and Ebony, at least at first, and Sam and Paul were probably pretty far ahead, but everybody had a chance. And I think that's why I'd have to go back and check, but why they put the face off in a leg after a non-elimination and a speed bump. They didn't want to have a case where a team, we never, because you've seen that before, where a team is in last, they never catch up, they never get anywhere, and then they just are eliminated. Now, granted, they all arrived at the same time, but still with the speed bump, you figure they had to be further behind. So I don't know. I never really got the sense that Corey and Ivana were not going to win. You just had a feeling Andrea and Ebony were probably going to be last. I'm not sure why that was. I don't know. I don't have much else to say. Yeah, Bert's dance was very premature. It would have been sad. Well, I mean, sad for them as a team if Bert's dance eventually led them to being eliminated. I mean, was there much else for you?
I don't know. I mean, you have to wonder as well, if they put the face off next to the speed bump on purpose to say, like, hey, in case this last pace team gets dragged behind even more, let's drag another team down with them. And again, that's one of the things that I don't like about the face off. I'm fairly like lukewarm on the face off as it is. But one of the things I don't like about it is the fact that as many teams outlined this episode, you have to wait for another team to get there. So it's essentially less about like a let's go through the race as fast as we can. It becomes a moment of, OK, we have to wait for the next team to get here so we can beat them and then move on. So it put things to a little bit of a standstill. And that's why I believe I might be wrong here, but I don't think the positions actually changed that much. I know I talked up the variants of this season, but I don't think things changed a lot once they went into the roadblock from the faceoff. I believe that, you know, Kenneth and Ryan end up passing Adam and Andrea because Andrea chokes like Sweet D and It's Always Sunny at Philadelphia at stand up. But outside of that, things were pretty stringent in their placements just based on how they finished in the faceoff.
Yeah, because if you look at where they went into the roadblock, yeah, the only change was, like you mentioned, because Andrea got a lot of food thrown at her. That was the, you know, she really couldn't nail those jokes about the difference between men and women and such that she picked from the 50 jokes or options. I was really curious to know what were the really bad jokes that they did not pick, because the ones they picked were not that great. You know, I mean, Bert's joke about the I didn't even totally get it. The bird flying backwards or something was, there were some of them that were just,
No. Let's not take Bert's delivery here, because first of all, I feel like this was Bert's five-hole challenge, even more than a rapping challenge, because this is a dad jokes challenge where these are really groan-worthy jokes and you have to go in and deliver them. And Bert, for some reason, could not deliver. It wasn't even about flying backwards. I think the joke was like, oh, it's so windy here in Newfoundland that I saw a seagull flying with its eyes closed. That's the joke, to quote McBain. And the fact that Bert's like, oh, and the bird's flying backwards and he's smoking a pipe and reading a book, like, dude, do not complicate the joke. I'm very fortunate that I got to come on here and that, you know, in previously covering Last Comic Standing for RHAP, I delved a lot into stand-up comedy, and in living my own life, I delved a lot into not being funny. So really, this was right in my wheelhouse.
Well, I'm also have delved a lot into not being funny, so that we're on the same page here. We're doing good. But I mean, holy guacamole, you know, I mean, these were great jokes. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, okay, what's the joke there? Oh, yeah. So though I am a dad, and I will say, when you have an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old, you can still be the funniest person ever, even if you just say bad dad jokes. So Bert maybe is on that level with his kids. He doesn't really have to try that hard, but I agree. Maybe, you know, they love theater and he's a performer, and yet he was not so good. Sam, though, we saw the most of Sam, but would you agree? Sam was probably the best. I thought Ivana was very good, which I wondered because, you know, English not originally being her first language, I believe, or possibly, but she was awesome. But Sam, I think, was the champ. Like you said, one of the great legs of an individual that we've seen. So could you have, though, done better than Andrea and Bert?
Yeah, I mean, Sam was a natural on the mic. Even just like his delivery was pretty effortless, which, again, you would not expect. I mean, I guess if we sort of have the closest comparison in terms of roadblocks in Amazing Race Canada history, this is comparable, I guess, to the rock song roadblock from season 2, I think it was. But even then, you could sort of like fudge out, you know, the words and the melody, even if you didn't really know it. I feel like in this one, like, comedy and timing is hard to get. And Sam is actually pretty good at it. I know that, again, they were pegged as the boring team from the beginning, but I feel like between this and the task that they had at the Great Wall of China, where they had to direct people and they were really showing personality by like singing their words and gesticulating everywhere, they definitely are showing personality. So maybe if Sam has any sort of free moments when he's in medical school, most likely not, but if he happens to at the number one medical school in choice in Canada for Sam, maybe he'll be able to do some quick fives down at like the Laugh Factory on the side.
Yeah, I mean, he's got so many skills, this Sam, you know. I mean, what could he not do? You know, he was also He was also pretty good at surfing. Who knew, you know? So he's got a lot of skills. He also is really good at falling on his face, which is a good skill to have as a comedian, is sometimes you just got to fall down if nothing else works.
Yeah.
So
Bert almost did that, and he still did not do well. So it's not exactly a guarantee.
You can still get the food thrown at you, even if you fall on your face. Yeah, you mentioned the rock song. There was also the Shine a Light challenge from last season where they all had to sing together. But again, the judging on that one, not that difficult. This, it seemed like, who's to say how the judging really was, but it was really a memorization one where I don't know if they had to, it's not like where you had to say every word, because like if you powered through it, you could kind of improv a little bit. But that was one thing I didn't totally get, because we saw when they totally screwed up, but we didn't see every try that everyone did, because all of a sudden they're like, Bert's on his third try and Andrea's on her fourth. And so there may have been things where it wasn't totally clear, which is fine. But I think even though I feel like, you know, I could have done better, maybe, this wasn't that easy. It's harder than it looks, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you get in front of an audience. I feel like there's just something that, like, even if you're a performer, the pressure just mounts for some reason when there's a difference between like saying it in front of one person and then going in front of a crowd and actually trying to deliver it, even though it's still an Amazing Race Canada task, like it's your own material. I do agree that like Andrea, maybe she was a little too fast and loose. She was very casual when she was talking to people, which might have resulted in her losing the plot a number of times. What did you think about Corner Brook's very own Trent McClellan as the MC at the Canadian Comedy Club?
Are you familiar with Trent McClellan's comedy? Because I was not. You know, he seemed fine, I guess. I should have Googled him before this, though. That was my bad. I'm curious, you know. Let me see here. Let's check on the Trent McClellan Twitter followers. Do you think we should do that as a good gauge on his popularity?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, he has a Wikipedia article. It is very, very short, but I feel like that's definitely a moment of prominence. I mean, I think, I don't know how many famous people Corner Brook is necessarily breeding, so maybe they decide to really build that up. But I thought he was fun. I liked him sort of giving the fun little like meta moment of him saying like, you see, true comedy is repeating the same jokes over and over again, and it just getting less funny every single time. I thought that was a fun moment from him, a very like self-effacing moment. I thought he was, you know, he's obviously no pencils down judge, which is obviously like the gold standard of task judge, but he was a comedian judging comedy. I feel like this was his wheelhouse.
Okay, yeah. So right now I'm still making an attempt here to find, how do we spell Trent McClellan? This is the big question here. But do you have it?
McClellan.
Because I found a Trent McQuillan who had 36 followers. I assume that is not the right Trent with the picture of two kids. So, you know, we're doing this live here, Mike. This is, you know, not. Oh, here he is. Trent McClellan. He has 2,905 followers, but he is not verified. So I don't know. I mean, he is a stand up comedian, so that's cool. I don't know. He apparently shows up sometimes, like he's showing up on a show called 22 Minutes. So I don't know. So Trent McClellan, you know, good host. It's no Beatnik bus. He's way ahead of that. So he's got a lot more followers than we had with that last season. So, you know, it's fun to bring in a local, though. That's always a cool thing.
Yeah, and we'll see. Maybe he gets the Amazing Race bump from this. But no, I mean, kudos for him getting on This Hour Has 22 Minutes. I know that most likely from my, blinders on Americanized perspective, because Nathan Fielder, a.k.a. the guy from Nathan For You, first did those little bits on This Hour Has 22 Minutes. It's sort of like another sketch-like show they do there up in Canada, I believe.
Well, that's cool. Yeah. And I have heard of him. So this is why we have you on the show, Mike, because you've got we knew there was going to be a stand up comedy task at some point, and we just thought this is the time to bring in Mike Bloom. And it worked out just perfectly.
How prescient of you to know there was going to be a stand up comedy challenge on the Amazing Race Canada.
Yeah. You know, I keep my ear to the grindstone and then just go from there. So, and you combine that with you losing your final team from the draft. And I say this as someone who thinks his team Giver and Karen and Bert have no chance, but I feel like it was good timing to bring you on. So are we ready for questions here?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so we didn't get a ton of questions this week, and I've already addressed some of them. Let's see here. You mentioned the other face-offs. So M-E-M on Twitter asked, how would you rate this iteration of the face-off to previous ones? So how would you, can you rank them for me, the ones that you mentioned?
Oh, God. I mean, I'll be quite honest here. The one that really sticks out for negative reasons is the water polo challenge, just because so many teams had such a problem with it. And also Simeon Ope in what I still think is one of the most disastrous legs in any Amazing Race iteration I've ever seen, between the quittings and Kristen going to the hospital and the penalties. It was I think there's a speed bump because it was an elimination leg at the end of it. It was just an insane leg. But I don't want to rank it number one because I don't think it was very good. I'm inclined to put the curling as number one, because I remember the curling was actually pretty exciting. And I remember the volleyball was pretty good as well. So if I'm going to come up with like a loose ranking, it might go curling, volleyball, maybe bowling in the middle, and then golf, and then water polo at the end of it.
Yeah, and it's funny, though, that when I thought back to the face-offs, the first one I thought of was the water polo. I think they called it polo hockey, but that was they were coming up with a strange name for something that apparently didn't have it. But that one, yeah, like you said, that was the most ridiculous leg of it's a memorable leg, but not something you really want to be memorable for. The curling is the one that stood out to me because it showed up in the final. I believe it was the final four is where they had that. And Brennan Shaun were like curling masters and ended up winning the leg. And I think that was also the leg with the Western stuff. So that was just one of those legs near the end, which was really good. Yeah. So that was a fun one. That's the first one. I barely remember the volleyball and the golf. And I think both of them were last season. So that's not a great sign for the show. Yeah. They both were last season. So I think I agree with your rankings. I think that seems to be about right.
Yeah, and I think the curling, if I remember, that was also like the controversy in quotations between Gino and Jesse and Nick and Matt, with like the Gino and Jesse took Nick and Matt's taxi. I think so there was like some bad blood there and they were really pissed off at each other. So there was actually a surprising amount of drama and intrigue going into that face off. So I feel like it's got to be number one with a bullet.
Yeah, that was Cabotage.
My God. Yes, now I remember. It's all coming back to me now.
Yes, it was very thrilling. So let me see here. So I'm just going to throw another question to you. So we talked about the speed bump. John Johnston asked, was that the easiest one we've seen in recent years? So what do you think? I mean, we don't need to go through all the U.S. ones. I mean, if we went through that, we had the ice cream, the sitting on ice. I mean, there's some that are like, you know, riding the spa bus that are silly. But according to Canada, do you remember some recent ones, how this compares?
I'm trying to remember because, again, like these all get jumbled in my head. I'll do some research while you're talking, but this feels like the simplest. I'll say that. I don't know if it's easiest, but I'll say it's simple. Again, it was just a target, a man standing there helping advise them. And that was pretty much it. This definitely felt like something you might see in like the first season of a show when the budget's really low. So it kind of stuck out like a sore thumb to me in the fifth season. But I'll have to do a little bit of research just now to look into some of the other ones from the past couple seasons to see how exactly it fares on the easy scale. What about you?
So, yeah, I did look it up and I did not remember all of these at all. So I think it was similar because, I mean, I look back, going back to season two, there were several that I don't remember that well. Like they had Robin Ryan playing an accordion. But in terms of just thinking about last season, Kelly and Kate carried some toads. And I think the whole point of that was, ooh, toads are kind of icky. And then we had the Christmas Island letters with Rita and Yvette, where most of that, I think, was just like, hey, it's pretty cool. They get to go dress up and stamp these letters. So in both cases, it's more about giving them, it's kind of an extra experience. You know, I don't know how much carrying toads really totally is for Vietnam, but still they kind of, I feel like it's usually easy. So the question is, the ease or difficulty is kind of, I'm not ripping on the question, but is almost a moot point for most part, because the way they've been doing it, it's mainly for me, how interesting is it as a task? And that's where I think the archery fails more, because really,
that's a good point.
Yeah, beyond Ebony missing a few times, there really wasn't much to this, right?
Yeah, and I'm looking back at some just now, and you have, like, Amazing Race 3, you have, like, Brent and Sean having to dip wine bottles in wax, and, you know, you have, you talked about the toads and the accordion stuff, and those are at least, I feel like those are less so about, like, completed tasks as much as it's like, hey, spend 20 minutes doing this. There's not even, like, a level of skill there, and the archery, I guess, somewhat measures skill, but like you said, I feel like even those just sound more interesting on paper than, hey, shoot arrows in a target, which I feel like is something that I would do in gym class and also do on the Wii, which might be, maybe there'll be an archery face-off next season in Amazing Race Canada 6. Who knows at this rate? But yeah, I feel like on the creative scale, this one might not necessarily measure up.
Yeah, it's limited. I mean, I don't think... expanding it beyond Kanto, like I said, I don't think it's the most egregious one we've ever seen, but because there are, I can't even remember some of the, I mentioned a few of the ones that were not very good, but there's a whole score of them that are not so good, but it wasn't super thrilling. I'm glad we didn't spend that much time with it.
Yeah, we spent more time talking about the speed bump than the actual duration of the time they spent on the yeah. speed bump, including a commercial break.
Yeah, it was basically Ebony missed again. Andrea said, I'm really good. Look at my yoga pose, and then hit it. And then they were done. If you haven't seen the episode, that's yep. all you need to know. So I don't know. Let's see here. Have you heard, Mike, about the Amazing Race Canada reunion and who will mm-hmm. be hosting it? Because it is the wonderful people of. So what is your opinion? Are you a big fan from over here in the States? What do you think about the social? Have you come across a lot of videos or important things from the great show, The Social?
I'll be completely honest. You know, I like dabbled in checking out some of those Amazing Race reunions. They are weird because I believe in the first few seasons, they did reunions like halfway through the season, which was weird to be like, hey, let's check in with like the first five teams eliminated just as a sort of like a halfway recap. It was sort of an odd way to sort of structure things. I don't know exactly what sort of drama is going to fly at the reunion. I know the reunion hosts have sort of been looked down upon in the past in terms of not handling things well or not knowing anything about the show. So we shall see, but it's rather innocuous in the face of the race proper, in my opinion. I don't have enough of an opinion to really quibble about it.
Yeah, no. And I just really like to take shots because I'm not an expert on The Social, but in last year, especially, I watched a lot of the preview videos with people from The Social. Oh my. Yeah. And I know that I have not generally watched the reunion, but I did watch I watched part of the season 3, like you mentioned, in the middle. They had James Duffy hosted this. He was big in season 3. They even had the task and everything. He hosted the middle reunion, which was so dumb because they would ask them like, what do you think about this team? And no one could say anything because they knew what was going to happen. And it was even worse than like,
yeah, they're there at, yeah. When you're there standing on the finish line, when that's one of the concept of the race and you ask people like, hey, what do you think is going to happen? It's tough to have them try to come up with a lie in the middle. But didn't they also do a reunion at the end too? That's when your loves Dana and Amanda got the fan favorite prize for some reason.
I still don't know. I remember that someone like people tweeted at me and they're like, hey, they won fan favorite. And I was like, they were on like 3 episodes. I don't understand. But hey, I guess maybe they got everyone going. Yeah. I mean, the when you think, because sometimes like I used to think in the US, I used to think, wow, I wish they did a reunion like Survivor. And then I've watched a few of the ones for Canada and I think, yeah, maybe they shouldn't do a reunion for the U.S. Amazing Race. Maybe there's just not that much to talk about. You know, maybe not everyone can be Jeff Probst. You know, we don't all have great superstars you can go to the crowd and see. So maybe it's okay. I don't know. I don't think I'm going to watch this season probably, which I know as a Amazing Race, you know, person that covers it, maybe that's bad, but are you going to watch the reunion this season?
Maybe I'll seek it out. Again, I enjoy these people enough that it'll be interesting to watch them on screen, but at least in a larger capacity after the show. But I think the interesting thing as well is that I don't know if it's necessary because I don't know if you've been noticing this happened a lot with season 29, but I believe Team Giver has been doing on and off like weekly updates, talking through what they do, like through their eyes, how they saw the past week's episode. And that sort of could be the place of a reunion, because it basically answers the questions of like, what were you thinking in this moment outright with them just saying it on the video. So maybe in this day of millennials and VR starting line experiences, who knows if we actually need people asking these questions, if the teams are just going to offer to say things themselves every week on their own video space.
Yeah, that's true. And because teams seem to, I mean, yeah, like you mentioned, I know what there's, you could do YouTube teams, even on, you know, some of them, I don't know how active they are on Twitter, not that much, but still there's plenty of avenues where teams can do this. So it's not as big of a surprise really by the time you get to the end. So it probably seems anticlimactic. So mm-hmm. I think we're pretty good on the questions. Yeah. Is there anything else, any other things that happened in the episode you think we should cover?
No, I mean, I feel like for there being a lot of stuff in this episode, I do feel like we got through nearly all of it. That being said, you know, we have a very interesting five teams left. I'm still eyeing that Sam and Paul, Giver, Adam and Andrea final three, though I could see Corey and Ivana possibly sneak their way in there. That being said, I look forward to them going into the Caribbean. They are actually following a very interesting pattern to season four, where they also did like, hey, a few legs in Canada, go to Asia, come back, go to the Caribbean, and then come back to Canada. They're almost following that exact same pattern. And the Cuba legs, I remember, were fun last time. So hopefully Panama proves as fun as well. And not to talk too much about the next time on, but we got a lot of drinking going on. We got a lot of boxing, a roadblock that actually looks pretty darn tough. So it should be a really fun gaggle of tasks, and with this really fun group of teams that hopefully makes good television.
Yeah, I'm curious about that drinking task, because it seems like it might have something to do with, you know, how they always do that, like where you have to smell flowers and then go smell something else. I wonder if it's a case where they have to somehow identify different drinks, and if they're alcoholic. Yeah. That I assume that would be somehow a half of a detour, because you don't really want to have a show where you force someone to drink alcohol. But, you know, that was because that's what I've always advocated for. What are you talking about,
Dan? MTV basically makes a reality franchise out of that fact. But yeah, I do believe that John said it actually in the next time out that the detour is going to be between the drinking and the boxing.
Oh, OK. So that makes more sense, because I've advocated for a face off where they have to like do some sort of beer drinking, possibly to mimic John's famous moment. But that's probably bad, because not everyone drinks, and that could, there's so many problems with that. So I've been rethinking that recently, you know, not because of any personal experiences, but just in general, that might not be the best idea. But great. So I think this is going to be an exciting final five. Actually, I hope that I am not right with my prediction for the final three, because those three teams I'm predicting are Jess's three teams that she drafted. So hopefully you will be right and Team Giver will make it. But I do want to give a quick administrative note, because we are still getting people coming to us on Twitter and saying, hey, I love the podcast. Well, they don't really say that, but that's implied. They say, how do I watch The Amazing Race Canada? I don't live in Canada. And the best way to do it is Jess and I are both members of the Rob as a Podcast Patrons group. And that's a case where it's through Patreon. You give a small amount to help support Rob as a Podcast. And then you have access not only just to find about The Amazing Race Canada. That's almost a secondary thing. You get to talk to a lot of cool people. You get to talk about Survivor and The Amazing Race and many other shows, Big Brother. And also, if you are into The Amazing Race Canada, you can get some tips, and people are able to help track down that the different episodes, because the CTV doesn't always make it easy. It's not a case. I really wish they would just leave it open, because it's fun. I wish more people here were able to watch the show, but that is the best way to do it. And also, please keep leaving questions. You can leave questions there too, that we read on the show, or send it to Twitter. Mike, where are you on Twitter?
You can follow me at a Mike Bloom type, and I'm doing podcasts here and there over the course of the summer. I actually was just on post-show recaps. I did a quick recap of Wet Hot American Summer did their 10 years later sequel to the prequel to the movie TV series, and I recap that with Ariel Glassman. I'm actually doing exit interviews right now for Big Brother on Parade, and I'm also doing Game of Thrones recaps, and I'll be doing some Survivor Survivor stuff in the fall as well. So a lot of stuff going on, and I'm very excited to be able to do it all. And I'm very excited to keep following the season along with you two and hear you both talk some shop about everything else going on with Amazing Race Canada for the rest of the season. Thanks so much for having me on, Dan.
No, it was great to have you. It's fun to have you come in and guest when Jess or I can't make it, and to get your thoughts on the season, because it's a fun show. And also, if you guys want to follow me on Twitter, I am at the Dan Heaton, and Jess is, of course, at Haymaker Hattie, and we'll be back next week from her vacation. And stay tuned. Next week, the Amazing Race Canada teams are going, like we said, to Panama. I think it's going to be really fun, and have a good day.